Well, hey there, gang. Welcome back to the Gutowski Files, starring our very own Stephen Gutowski. Stephen is the founder and owner at TheReload.com. He is a handsome man. We're talking about hair. I know we don't want to do anything other than firearm stuff on the show, but we were doing a little hair talk behind the scenes. I don't have any. Listen, if you like Stephen's current look, leave us a comment on whatever platform you're listening to. Give us a yay or a nay. Discuss it, debate it in the comments, and let us know what you think. He's trying to go for a different look now. So you let us know what you think about Stephen's hair. Stephen, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. We can, and at the end of the show, we can get into my whole salon dune conversation on the whole story on how it got to this.
It is a whole thing. Our pre-tape talks are very wide ranging. Today we talked about everything from the Barbie movie to his podcast to hairstyles to Dune to CNN, makeup people, all sorts of stuff. So you know, maybe we'll do a Patreon of just stuff we're talking about behind the scenes, and we'll get three people to give us $2 each.
Or just put it on the Asp Extra, Asp Plus.
Absolutely, on the app. So this week, we're talking about a couple of things. We're going to start talking about, first, about the podcast from this week. And there's actually some good news, which is always nice. Frequently, when you turn into any of the major cable networks or whatever, your local news, if it bleeds, it leads, is kind of a cliche, but it is kind of true. The big, scary mass shooting, you know, domestic violence sort of stuff seems to lead every newscast, and we want to bring you some good news from time to time, and there hasn't been a lot of it. So, Stephen, talk to us about who was on your podcast and what that good news is exactly.
Yeah, we had crime analyst Jeff Asher. He runs a crime data collection company, and his reports have actually been the source for a number of major media outlets. The Wall Street Journal, for instance, just wrote about one of his new reports, and so we had him on the show. We've had him on before as well. He's a great source. He actually goes out and collects the crime data from police departments directly. There's hundreds of police departments that report their crime data on a regular basis. Like the most people use the FBI as a source for this information, which makes sense. You know, they do a national collection, but they only do it annually. And so Jeff's able to go out and collect it and give updates on a more frequent basis. And his data has lined up very well with the FBI's reports in recent years. So he's very reliable. And what his data is showing right now is that there's a huge drop in the murder rate, a continued drop, right? Last year, we saw a massive decline, probably a record decline, double digit decline in the murder rate. Now, obviously, that's in part because we had huge increases in the murder rate the 2 years prior to that. You know, the pandemic era saw huge increases in the murder rates to the point where we're getting closer to those rates from the 90s, which were quite bad. After a relative, we had like 15 years of relative low murder rates in the United States. And then, we had 2 years there where it was like, oh, are we going to stay at this level of elevated murder, which is not something anybody wants. And it looks like we're not, which is super positive. And then on top of that, we haven't actually experienced yet a mass shooting in the United States that qualifies under the Violence Project definition. We have some discussion about this on my podcast, a longer discussion about the different definitions out there, why they're better or worse, pros and cons of each. I think the Violence Project one is the best because it filters based on the kind of attack it is. So, you know, the ones that get covered in the news tend to be your lone actor who's going out in public and murdering a bunch of people in a single event, right? And it's not something related to a shootout or a criminal act. You know, it's not a robbery or a gang shooting or something along those lines. And that's what the Violence Project captures. And we haven't had one of those this year. We haven't had one of those since Maine, which was about 6 months ago, actually. But of course, at the same, so that's really good news as well. And we go over that and maybe some of the reasons why it might not necessarily pertain to a fewer number of those incidents throughout the year. I have a whole members piece on that over at The Reload as well. Just 'cause those sorts of events are pretty unpredictable, right? And sporadic. They don't necessarily happen in a timely fashion, or, and you might get a couple that happen really close together, and then there'll be big gaps between, between events after that. So it's hard to know for sure where that's headed, but the murder rate stuff is a lot more, there's a lot more meat there to look at. There's, unfortunately, because there's a lot more murders as a part of right. it. So you can kind of analyze that a little bit better and look at trends. And that's what Jeff does on the show with me. So I think it's a really good episode. I think it's very informative, and it's good news for once, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So go check that out over at thereload.com. While you're there, do me a favor. You know, Stephen comes on our show every week for free, lends us his expertise, lends us his knowledge and information. So do me a favor. If you're interested in what he has to offer over there, and you should be, if you're into guns, you're into the Second Amendment, go to The Reload and consider getting a membership. It's not that expensive, and it really, really does help Stephen continue to do his important work. And he can't do it for free. He'd have to go back to managing the Denny's, and we don't want to see that happen. So the other thing we're talking about this week
is we actually have a sale right now too.
Oh, really? Well, tell the good people about that.
Yeah, it's our third anniversary at The Reload. For anyone who doesn't know, we launched in April of 2021. So we've been chugging along for 3 years. I think we've had a major impact. We've had our stories cited in federal court rulings. We've had them cited on the Senate floor. They've had impacts on presidential nominations for different positions at the ATF, for instance. And you know, we've broken a lot of stories. We've been able to publish documents that were leaked documents from government agencies that affect how firearms are regulated. We've had a lot of success, and we've only been able to do that because we have those members who fund the whole thing. I mean, we're an independent operation. I own The Reload 100%, and I'm not somebody. I was a reporter at a small outlet before I went and did this. I don't have any kind of huge bankroll for it. So it really is members who've made it all possible. And so, you know, we're doing a sale, the anniversary sale, 20% off for, you know, anyone who signs up today. So
very good. We'll go check it out. TheReload.com. We are discussing an article by our very own Stephen Gutowski. It is dated April 22nd. The headline is Supreme Court takes up Biden ghost gun case. And this is significant and not as straightforward as you might think. So Stephen, kind of break this down for our listeners and tell us what's going on.
Yeah. So the ATF, this is one of those rules that we actually were the first ones to publish a leaked copy of when it was first being considered by the ATF 3 years ago. We were the Reload was the first one to publish the working draft of this exact rule that eventually was finalized and put into place, which deals with what the ATF considers to be a firearm, a receiver or frame under the Gun Control Act of 1968. And all that to say that what they consider to be the part of the gun that you need a background check to buy, that the makers of have to put a serial number on and get licenses to sell, right? All this stuff that's required under the Gun Control Act, there, the ATF wants to draw a new line on where that begins and give themselves much greater power over deciding what piece of metal is a firearm or not. Cause you know, if anyone, any of the listeners who's ever gone out and bought, for instance, a finished stripped lower for an AR-15, I have a bunch right here. Technically that's a firearm itself, even though it does not a working firearm. This is the part that the ATF is, you know, this lower piece of the gun. You have, there's something like this in every gun that's out there. Your 1911's frame is the regulated part, right? To try and apply this Gun Control Act to real life commerce in firearms. And one of the things that President Biden has made a priority since he took office is going after what he calls and what you'll hear commonly referred to as ghost guns, which are just unserialized firearms. There can be
scary some name, by the way, that is literally made up. So
yes, yes, it's similar to the idea of an assault weapon, sort of a political term that gets thrown around that has, and in fact, in this case, has kind of a squishy definition, because a ghost gun, what they're referring to with that is not just homemade firearms that won't have serial numbers because they weren't produced by a gun maker, right, as a finished product, but also refers to regular guns that have had their serial numbers scraped off too, because the idea is a ghost gun is a gun where the ATF can't trace the origins of the firearm if it's found in, if it comes into their possession somehow, either through some sort of crime scene, right? And so anything that's not traceable is a ghost gun under this imagining, or this the way that the president refers to it, for instance. And so the ATF put this rule into place. It's primarily designed to try and ban the production and sale of what people usually call, and this is another colloquial term, but an 80% lower, right, or an 80% receiver, because it's essentially the, just using the AR-15 example again, it's like a 80% finished AR-15 lower. That's the, so there's still some work that you have to do at home to actually make it into a functioning firearm, or to where you would not just assembling the parts, but you actually have to do milling or drilling out holes and things of that nature to actually finish the gun. These have become much more popular in recent years with homemade gun makers, also with, to be fair, with criminals as well, of course. But that's the center of this fight, is this rule. It's not a law, right? It wasn't something where Congress passed new legislation for this. It's the ATF coming and reinterpreting previous legislation from 1968, right? The Gun Control Act, and saying, this is how we view this now, and this is how we're going to enforce things from now on based off of this previous statute that's already existed for decades. And so that's where the challenge comes from. The idea, this is actually not a Second Amendment challenge. It's a gun case that the Supreme Court is taking up, but it's not a Second Amendment case, because the plaintiffs here aren't challenging this rule on the basis that it violates their Second Amendment rights. Although there are lawsuits that make that claim, but not this one that the Supreme Court is taking up. Instead, they're claiming that the ATF, by reinterpreting their the Gun Control Act, by changing how they view what it empowers them to do, they violated federal law. There's Administrative Procedures Act. There's another federal law that basically outlines how federal agencies can operate and what their limitations on their ability to reinterpret federal statutes are. So that's what the law is being challenged under. It has, right now, the challenge has been successful in the lower courts. The Fifth Circuit, which is the one in Texas, this is, you know, the Ninth Circuit and the Fifth Circuit tend to be the most famous ones. They tend to get written about a lot because the Ninth Circuit's in California and tends to be very liberal. The Fifth Circuit's in Texas and tends to be very conservative. And so a lot of these high profile cases will come out of one of those two circuits, especially gun laws, from sort of the opposite end of the spectrum. You get rulings there and they can end up at the Supreme Court afterwards. But the Fifth Circuit, a panel there sided with the plaintiffs and said the ATF did overstep its power, did overreach. And so that's where the last ruling was. But now the Supreme Court has said, we're going to take this case.
So a couple questions for me. First of all, we talked about before how much neither one of us, I think, love the idea that there's these sort of bureaucratic rule changes all the time. And how is the average person, and this has been an argument in some legal cases, how is the average person supposed to keep up with all of this? It's like there's some central repository or I get an email alert every time the FBI changes the rules slightly. That's just my editorializing. So my two questions are,
well, there is a federal repository for it. It's there's a federal register. That's where they publish these rules. Although that was something that was kind of a joke in the bump stock case. Remember we talked about that one, sort of similar arguments at play here. It was cause that was another ATF rule reinterpreting what they had previously said in order to claim that bump stocks are actually machine guns, or they convert a gun into a semi-automatic into a fully automatic. Justice Gorsuch made a joke about, to your point, about like people don't read the Federal Register, even if it is something that technically exists. So you could go and look at as a member of the public. You could go in and read all these rules in theory, but most people don't, of course.
I recommend a double espresso, a Vivarin and a No-Dose and a 6-pack of Jolt Cola before you start reading. If you care to make it anyway through any of that stuff, very droll.
Yes. They're hundreds of pages long usually. Yeah.
So my first question is, who brought these actions? Like, is there a specific gun control group that did it, or was it a coalition? And then assuming quote unquote, we win, or, you know, the gun rights community wins this, what does that look like going forward?
Yeah. So, this is actually the culmination of a bunch of different cases that got sort of smashed together as things went up the chain of appeals. But you have the Second Amendment Foundation is one that's involved. So is the Firearms Policy Coalition. You had Defense Distributed is one of the companies involved. So is Polymer 80. These are, you know, players in that sort of 80% market, some of the largest players there. And there's a lot of people involved, really. This is more of a coalition. And a lot of that came from just cases getting pushed together, which is pretty common. You have a bunch of different cases in the same circuit that are about the same question, they tend to get combined along the way if they're making it up the chain like this.
As far as what could happen with the case itself, I think there's good reason to believe that the court is going to side with the plaintiffs in this case. It's not a certainty, of course. We're not even going to have oral arguments in this until probably October.
Oh, okay. Or
somewhere around there. They're just accepting the case now. This is they granted certiorari, which means we're going to look at this case now. It's been adjudicated at the lower courts. They have come to their conclusions, and now it's been appealed. Actually, the government appealed this to the Supreme Court, often because they don't like the situation where if it deals with federal law and one of the circuits has struck down a federal rule or something that applies nationwide, the government will usually want the Supreme Court to try and sort that out, as opposed to like a state law getting struck down.
Sure.
You might not see the same effect because they want to have nationwide uniformity in how things are enforced. It makes sense, right? If you're the federal government, but you don't want federal laws to just be enforced in some circuits and not other circuits, states and not other states. So, at the same time, you have seen the court already intervene in this case twice. We might have talked about it on the show before, but the lower courts here had initially granted, totally vacated this rule at the district court level and said it's not enforceable nationwide. And the Supreme Court has had some issues with these kinds of rulings in recent years. They don't seem to like when district courts judges will issue nationwide injunctions based off of that lower level hearing.
Right.
And so the court intervened and said, we're issuing a stay. Like they ruled a lot of times what happens, and we talk about this, right, in our other cases where gun rights plaintiffs might get a favorable ruling, but it doesn't change things in practice because a stay gets issued. As the court case goes along, a stay pending appeal, right, is a common thing to happen in federal courts. Well, in this case, that didn't happen. The rule was vacated. There was no stay granted by the lower court. And so the government went up to the Supreme Court and said, hey, first they went to the panel, the three-judge panel on the Fifth Circuit and said, hey, please stay this lower court ruling. And that panel said no too. Then they went to the Supreme Court and the Supreme Court said, yes, we will do that. And that actually happened twice, because once it got sent back down, then on the merits, they did the same sort of game again. And the Fifth Circuit panel tried to limit the ruling a little bit to just named plaintiffs, but it was still pretty broad scope. And the Supreme Court came back in a second time and said, no, this is just going to be stayed. Nothing is going to happen until we're all the way through the merits, or the Supreme Court decides for itself what it's going to do. Right. And, that takes
six, or I think it takes five justices to grant those stays. And so you might think, well, that means the Supreme Court, there's five justices who are siding with the government. But it's not actually necessarily the case, because they're just siding on this particular point about how procedure should go.
It's very specific.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't necessarily mean that they're actually going to side with the government, the ATF, the DOJ, on the question of whether this rule is lawful or not. And but one thing that I think it does tell you is that the first time this all happened, there were four justices that didn't want to grant a stay at all. You know, it was the four conservatives outside of Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Amy Coney Barrett. So you already have four votes who didn't even think a stay was necessary in this case. That kind of tells you that they're probably on the merits going to be with the plaintiffs, the gun rights plaintiffs. And then you just have to see whether those two conservative justices who agreed to the stays for, you know, this administrative procedural stuff, are still going to be with the ATF on the merit stuff. And I don't, you know, that's where it really comes down most likely to those two, Justice Roberts and Amy Coney Barrett, who have been, I think, pretty skeptical of administrative powers to this point. Mm-hmm. Which is really what this case is more about than the Second Amendment.
Yeah, they share my suspicion of that sort of thing. I'm not a big fan. I like to see our elected representatives make laws that are binding the people that were elected to office and not bureaucrats, but that's not going to happen anytime soon. But I think this might be the first time we've had two good news stories, generally speaking. Stephen, am I wrong? Has this happened before? It's good times.
Yeah. I mean, just try to go where the news takes us, right? If it's good, it's good. If it's bad, it's bad.
Right. But I'm just happy to have two relatively good stories. Folks, do me a favor. Yep. You guys seem to like this around 20 to 25 minute long episode of the Gutowski Files. It's kind of where we've been landing naturally, organically lately. So if you don't like that, if you want it to be longer or you want it to be shorter, we won't know unless you leave us a comment. So go to whatever podcast provider you're using and leave us a comment. And we did have people who made it to the end last week who decided to spell out Gutowski in all capital letters.
Yeah, successfully too.
With hyphens in between each letter to emphasize Gutowski.
I mean, there's some cheating involved because the show's, it's in the title of the show. So it's not as much of a challenge as when trying to do it in like fourth grade, third, whatever. Maybe I'll say young in second grade, first grade. Fourth grade might be embarrassing. I don't know how old kids are at that point. But at some point in elementary school, when I was trying to do it from memory, that was harder because I didn't have, this is the Gutowski Files podcast in front of me. So I feel like there's a little
Steven,
cheating.
Steven is calling you all cheaters, I think is what we're hearing here.
Yes. Right. But the Dune story, so the hair, right?
Oh yeah.
We're going to get into this before the end of the show. And for those of you listening on the podcast, you'll just have to imagine what my hair looks like from the sound of my voice. So I just imagine that it's beautiful.
Luxurious.
Yes. We might have talked about this before. I've definitely talked about it in public, probably too much, but I, you know, ever since I watched Dune, the first one, which coincided with the pandemic. Right. And so my hair, I'd never grown my hair out before. Mm-hmm. And then the pandemic happened and no one was getting haircuts. Right. And so my hair grew out and I was like, maybe this would work for me. I got like wavy curly hair. And I have no idea how to do this properly, but if you watch the first Dune movie, the dad who played by Oscar Isaac, Duke, Atreides.
Yes.
Right. And the son played by, Timothy Chalamet.
Oh, right? Chalamet. Familiar.
Yeah. They both have great hair, long, curly, wavy hair, and they look fantastic, especially Oscar Isaac, in my opinion. Timothy Chalamet has kind of got like a Gen Z thing going. I don't know if I could pull that off.
I'm suspicious of anyone who can successfully do more than one advertisement, one of those frou-frou advertisements for cologne. That's a red flag for me, but go ahead. Him and Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
But so, you know, this has been on the mind, and now I've gone back after having cut it and gone with a shorter look for a while and I'm trying to embrace more of that curl. And, you know, I go to my stylist now that I'm growing my hair out a bit, and, or I go to a new stylist, and I've got pictures of Oscar Isaac from Dune. I'm like, okay, look at these. And I want to try to do that. And he's like, oh yeah, you got to just be a little shorter. And then I realized later on, and so this is the result. It's not bad, right? I think it's not too bad. It's pretty, it's a little closer, but I realized that I went and actually watched the movie and was just looking at his hair, and it's actually super long.
Only in profile.
Yeah. Like if you look at him straight on, it doesn't seem not, it's hard to tell, but he's actually got really long hair for the most part. And then they cut it all off right at the back. But so my goal now is to grow it out even longer. Is the end of that. And I hope to look like Duke of Atreides before the end of this year.
Very good. Well, you heard it here first, folks. Well, stay tuned. We might do hair talk again. We'll see what happens. Either way, John and I see John and
John's and hair looks great, by the way.
And Steven every week, and they just rub it in my face that I'm follicularly challenged. Their hair privilege goes unchecked yet again. And here I am with nothing going on.
You got a great beard, though.
Thank you. The wife, the lovely and fetching Mrs. Ass podcast actually trimmed this for me the other day. So
I'm breaking. There you go. Yeah. John's using like a curl cream now. I got to get some of that stuff. He looks great.
I'll find out what it is. I'll send you the name brand of that. But I think the people right now are just, I just imagine someone who's trapped under something heavy and they were listening to this. Now they can't get to the back to their device to turn it off to not listen to
this. This is a hair podcast now.
Any more of this hair talk. Folks, I can't thank you enough for listening, for watching on the app. If you made it this far, do me a favor. Let us know what you think of the format. Let us know what you think of the length of the show in general. And let us know what you think of my hair or lack thereof and Steven's hair. Steven?
I actually didn't even style his hair today. I just woke up and I was like, oh, that looks like it could work.
He can't stop with the hair talk. Steven, as always, sir, you have the last word.
Absolutely.